Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Season 2 of Snapped. As usual, we are your hosts. I'm Pete.
And I'm Paul.
And once again, this is your weekly dissection of music's greatest hits, hidden gems, and cultural resets. Each week, we dive deep into a different album to try and convince you that they truly snapped.
That's right, and today we are dissecting Sawayama, the debut album from Rena Sawayama, released on the 17th of April 2020. It is a follow-up to her independently released debut mini-album Rena. You see the concept, she's doing Rena as her EP and then Sawayama as the album.
Oh, I get it.
And the album received widespread acclaim from music critics, achieving an aggregate score of 90 out of 100 on Metacritic, including a 7.7 on Pitchfork, who said, "The Japanese-British pop singer's debut is a Y2K flashback that's as reverent of Evanescence and Korn as it is of Britney and Christina." A deluxe edition of the album was also released on the 4th of December 2020, featuring a bonus disc with 11 tracks, including two unreleased songs and the 1975's Love It If We Made It cover.
Where is the Dance in the Dark cover on the album?
It's on Spotify. Spotify single. It was in the dark, but it's so good. It's amazing.
Rena herself stated in a press release that the album is about family and identity. It's about understanding yourself in the context of two opposing cultures, for me, British and Japanese, what belonging means when home is an evolving concept, figuring out where you sit, comfortably within and awkwardly outside of stereotypes, and ultimately trying to be okay with just being you, warts and all. And I think that gives more credence to the album title being her surname when it is so much about her identity, her legacy, her family, her culture, and what being her means to her and so many different facets of that.
Yeah, I think when we start to talk about the specific songs, we'll see how much she struggles with identity. But to have the album title be her surname, but also it being bold, makes me feel like she's screaming it out. Like, it just is such the focus of what this album is about. I think it's such a clever way to do a self-titled album, especially coming off the EP Rena, to really be like, okay, this is the sort of final chapter in discovering who I am in this world.
I also think it's such a brave choice to have your surname, which isn't a less conventional surname or a less known surname, that then it's in the listener's mind. The second you're listening to it, you don't go, oh, Rena's something. Like, her name is her brand.
Yeah, and especially like all of the typography that you see in this era as well. Like, it is Rena in this really metallic font that all kind of runs into each other. And I feel like that even is about identity. Like, who is she? Who is she? Really leading with her first name in terms of her artistry. Like, she doesn't really claim to be Rena Sawayama in those logos, but then the album is all about Sawayama. I feel like if it had a question mark at the end of it, it would even make sense. Mm-hmm. It's like all about that questioning nature of it.
But one thing we shouldn't question is the cover.
I love this album cover. Oh my god, I think about it all the time. I think it's one of the best album covers I've ever seen. Like, I just think it's so like gold plated. I love the makeup she has on in the album cover too. I just think it's so unique.
It's stunning, and it's like something that can be recreated, and you know it's from this album.
Right. It feels like a piece of art to me. Even the way her hair is so unconventionally done, it's almost like on curtains. Like a pole, and then it's dripping down. I just don't think you see anything like that before. And then there's no typography on it. It's just her face. Like, it's so bold. The album is about Rena Sawayama, and that's what's on the cover. There's also a really cute challenge that she did at the start of lockdown called hashtag stay at home with me on YouTube, and she's recreating the makeup and the hair from it, like, at home by herself, and she just flops so bad. And it's so funny, she like video calls the artist that did the makeup, and they're like, oh, okay. I think their job was secure for life at that point.
I'm so dead. Oh my god.
It literally looks like I have mold in my... It looks like I have, like... like bread in my brows.
It's as if you've used Jolene.
She's just so cute. I feel like she's just so relatable and down to earth. And she did steal the hashtag from Ava. She was trying to battle the hashtag So Am I challenge.
Yes, the stay home with me versus the So Am I challenge was like fighting for gay rights back in 2020. But I just really love her personality. She does feel relatable. She feels like a normal person, but at the same time, she does feel a bit more than that. Like, the fact that the album cover is so outlandish makes it feel high concept. And I think that we come into her world through her personality, but then she tells her story so uniquely. There's just a really good dichotomy between those two things for me. I think one really interesting part of this too is that it was released pretty much at the beginning of the global pandemic, which just makes it so rooted in that time for me.
You must feel so annoyed. Well, there's pros and cons, because I feel like a lot of stuff like Future Nostalgia and Chromatica will be so evocative of that era, and must have been scary to be coming out with your debut album and it hits at the inverted commas, wrong time.
Yeah.
But it worked out so well for her.
I definitely think for her that is true. Compared to Chromatica, which I think maybe didn't do as well because of when it was released, Sawayama did. And I think one thing that she didn't do was push it back. Like, Lady Gaga pushed her album back from the 10th of April to the middle of May. And I think this really helped Rihanna carve out that space and not have to follow Gaga because Gaga was going to be 1 week before her. I think her career trajectory, if Gaga had released Chromatica 1 week before Sawayama, would be so different.
And then it's so cool to have Rihanna on the remix album of Chromatica then. Like, it's kind of like a nod from Gaga.
There's a lot of full story moments in Rihanna's career, and I think this is what pushes her from a normal person to that, like, global pop star, somebody whose name is being tossed around for Eurovision fake rumors. Molly May, or whoever what her name is there instead. And I think this album really was what propelled her into the public eye a little. Like, certainly in, like, gay pop culture, at least.
Let's get straight into these singles with the first one, STFU, or as some of you may know it as, Shut the Fuck Up.
The way she says it is so fun.
Shut the fuck up.
She says it a lot on this song.
As she should. So STFU is a nu metal, heavy metal, hard rock, pop and avant-pop track which criticizes microaggressions against Asian people. It received positive reviews from music critics who praise its aggressive tones and the shift in genre and direction. An accompanying music video for the song, which I really recommend you watch, directed by Sawayama and Ali Kerr, was premiered along with the song. Now this music video may be 6 minutes long, but it is so good.
Yeah, it really is. I think it sets up sort of what she's trying to say with this album from the very start. There's kind of like an extended intro before the song plays, and it's really about her being on a date with a white man who is just using so many different offensive microaggressions towards Asian people, and she just takes it on her chin. You know, she's obviously used to making excuses or letting things wash off of her, and then internally she's like, but I wish you would just shut the fuck up.
Lucy Liu.
Yeah. Love, yeah,
she's so have you seen great. Grey's Anatomy, the one in Grey's Anatomy as well?
Yeah,
you remind Sandra me of her. Huh?
Well, Sandra Oh or Lucy Liu.
Oh, literally either.
Yeah, it's almost like she's described it as sort of like Pixar's Inside Out, where in her head she's leaping across the table and slapping across the face, being like, shut the fuck up, like one of her emotions.
But yeah,
in reality, she's being so poised, not letting it annoy her, just like nodding. And she's like, I don't want to do that anymore in life. I don't want to just take on microaggressions and just sit with myself and then start to hate myself for these things they're saying about me. And actually, it's such an empowering song.
It really is, and it does speak to those themes around identity a lot, because I think Rihanna is very forthcoming in saying she struggled with identity because she's both Japanese but British born, and sort of the dueling, they're very different cultures obviously, and Rihanna's trying to carve a path out just to be herself. I just love the fact that this is so tongue-in-cheek, like it's funny, like it's obviously extremely offensive, but the way that they've set it up with the tone makes it enjoyable to watch at the same time, because you know that Rihanna ultimately is in the right in the situation.
And I really think it's brave to come out with such a heavy rock sound when you are more in the pop genre. Like, she's coming in to be kind of like alt music from her Rihanna EP, and then to come in hard with such like a headbanging, like, fuck you song. I think it's so cool. And I like how it is, like you say, about identity. And I feel like that's really clear in the really beautiful single art, where it's a picture of her face with almost like a jigsaw piece missing, like pulled out. It's like her identity, her culture. Yes, it's only one part of her, but it still is part of her overall makeup and how she presents and how she perceives herself.
It's so art, like, it's so artistic, the whole thing. The visuals in the music video are beautiful as well. They're very colorful. And I also, in the song itself, I like that there's that little like sing-songy part, you know, the part, and it's like that's her inner monologue, I think, being like, no, it's fine, you can't be rude back, you can't do any of that, because then you're gonna get called something else, and you gotta be composed. And the song structure is so complex. You're right, her EP is more R&B alt, and then this is so Evanescence inspired, as Pitchfork says. Where did this come from? Where did the song come from? But it marries up to the anger that she's feeling in the lyrics, and that's so complex.
I really think it is cool how much she plays with genres in this album, and you can definitely see that even from the second single.
Yeah, so the second single, Comme des Garçons, Like the Boys, blends genres such as disco, dance, funk, house, electro house, synth pop into a clubby record, the diametrical opposite of STFU.
Everything I believed about Rihanna's music is actually the diametrical opposite.
Oh my God.
I just think that's so brave. I think you're not putting yourself in a box immediately. You are saying, okay, I can do this, but I can also do this. Like, I can compete with people in different genres in my first album.
She's so versatile. There's talent and artistry here that, like, I don't think most people could handle.
She's a verse queen.
But she would strap it on as well. I just know. And like, especially more in STFU, this is more her bottom era. And I really like this song. I think it is a cute like pop song with lyrics all around acting more masculine because the boys have confidence. It's like that sort of gender identity. Like if you're a female, you aren't as confident. You can't really be as cocky. And in this song, she's really being like, no, we can harness all of that. We can take the confidence and then be a more assured person. But also there are lyrics that make it suggest that it's all like kind of false. Like you're putting on a fake pretense. And I think that is the struggle of like, are you really confident? Are you putting it on? And does it matter in the end?
Yeah, I think it's definitely an act of people who think they're better because they have designer clothes or designer items, and
yeah,
you can buy them on Wish for 1p. Like,
the song also has a music video. To me, it's more like a lyric video. Like a lot of the like brands come up on the screen when she's pointing at it and she's dancing in front of a green screen. Initially feels less of a high budget concept than STFU because I feel like it really looks good. But then I think that speaks to the theming around being fake, presenting something that isn't true. And therefore I'm like, oh, that's clever.
Yeah, especially the bits where she's on such a like weak green screen and you know that she and her team have the budget to not do that. I think that is tongue-in-cheek.
Yeah, oh, 100%. She's so clever. On the 21st of February 2020, a remix of the song featuring Brazilian singer and drag queen Pablo Vittar was also released.
I actually think this is my preferred version of it.
Agree.
I think the beat is a bit punchier and I think their voices go together really well. I didn't really like the song as much when I heard it first, and then when the remix came out, I think it made me appreciate it more. Same with Pablo on Marina's Man's World.
100% agree on that one too. Pablo comes in and just adds a spice to a song that I really like. You're right, the beat in the remix is so good. Like I close my eyes and I see myself in a club at the start. I think the start is really infectious, where I think the chorus is a bit weaker.
Yeah, I just love when songs start with that sort of like, you know those YouTube videos where it's like you're in the bathroom but into you's playing downstairs.
Yes.
Like
yes.
Somebody not know how to flush a toilet after they've had a shit.
Conversely, as an aside, I don't feel like their second collaboration, Follow Me, is as strong as this one for me. I think this is amazing. I think the cover art for their version of the single is so cool. It's like almost like they're like deities.
Rina says, when I was writing the song, I wanted on one hand to lyrically explore the idea of people having to adopt negative male tropes to appear confident, whilst on the other hand sonically paying homage to the early 2000s dance tracks that make me feel so confident. The idea that the socially acceptable version of confidence is in acting like the boys, otherwise as a woman you get called a bitch. But in the club, we reclaim the word bitch as a sign of ultimate confidence, like yes bitch, work bitch. I wanted to set those two together and make a club fashion banger that makes the feeling that you are that bitch, whoever you are. And these themes of acting above your income and sort of putting on a fake pretense only grew stronger in the third single.
Give me just a little bit more, a little bit of
excess.
Oh me, oh, oh my. Rina's third single from this album, and definitely the most well-known single and song from this album, is XS. Rina said in a statement that XS is a song that mocks capitalism in a sinking world. Given that we all know global climate change is accelerating and human extinction is a very real possibility within our lifetime, it seemed hilarious to me that brands were still coming out with new makeup palettes every month and public figures were doing a gigantic house tour of their gated property in Calabasas in the same week as doing a sad about Australian wildfires Instagram post. I mean, I'm guilty of turning a blind eye too, because otherwise it makes me depressed. We're all hypocrites because we are all capitalists, and it's a trap that I don't see us getting out of. I wanted to reflect the chaos of this post-truth climate change denying world in the metal guitar stabs that flare up like an underlying zip between the 2000s R&B beat that reminds you of a time when everything was all right.
Whatever that means.
Now, she's a wordsmith.
You're not, but she is.
I was like, Wordsworth?
No, I agree big time in terms of like, that is a law. And therefore, the song should come across very preachy. Again, referencing Marina, Man's World for me, and specifically Purge the Poison, are similar themings of this. Actually quite diametrically aligned in terms of Comme des Garçons, kind of like a discussion around men's confidence, and then this is around capitalism and the impact on the environment. But this doesn't feel preachy to me in any way in terms of the song.
I think it's best when people disguise a strong message behind a really good beat or really good song versus just saying it over a beat in the background.
Right, and I think Rina clearly is able to do that sometimes, and then on songs like This Hell, when you're referencing Diana and Britney, I don't feel like it's as effective. Mm-hmm. So it's good here to me that on her very first album, she's able to make sort of a social commentary point, but make it such a bop at the same time. Like, it's tongue-in-cheek. It's not so serious.
I definitely think this was when the gay ears of Twitter started to perk up to her, and even just the visuals and the beat. I really think this is a successful song, and I would have believed it was the lead single.
Agreed. This is the single from the album. Again, to put my personal touch on it, this is not my favorite song of Rena's, and like, I appreciate it for what it is. I definitely think she wouldn't be as big without this song. When she sings it, it's not my favorite. I find it a little bit repetitive, which I get is kind of the point at the same time. When she does it live on tour and stuff, I'm a bit like, oh my God, we're doing Access again. But then she gets into it and I'm like bopping along. Like, it's an earworm, it's infectious, and I do like it, but it's just sometimes a bit weird when you hear other songs that you think are better not getting the same attention as a song that you don't think is as good. But like, major props. I think this song is layered. And the fact that she's able to make it catchy, respect.
I really like that she brings in the sort of metal rock guitars back from STFU. It makes the whole piece feel more cohesive.
Agree massively on that one. It doesn't feel like each of these songs have a distinct sound. They do have different sounds, but they feel like they're in the same world.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that is impressive.
What is also impressive is the music video. In the video, Sawayama portrays a QVC-like robotic saleswoman who attends a Shopping Channel broadcast to promote a beverage named Rena Water, which consists of 99% 24-karat gold and 1% of plasma. It's then revealed that the liquid is extracted from a creature which is chained in an underground factory. Now, I said this to Paul when I was watching the video, but this is the plot of Season 2 Torchwood episode Meat, where she's the big meat wheel.
That's me in the bedroom. This music video is really good. Exploiting capitalism by like doing something negative to like something you don't understand is like really complex, but the music video is so fun, tongue-in-cheek and kitschy. Like, I feel like she could have had Lisa Rinna come out and do like one of her dusters.
Oh my God,
alongside.
Yes.
Yeah. But it's really fun. I think it's really visually striking. It's bright, it's colorful, feels like a bigger budget. I really enjoy the music video for this.
I just want to know what you think would taste nicer, Rena water or chippy tea water?
Baggers, chippy tea water!
Whoa, chippy tea water every single time. I'm so sorry, Rena. Well, that's like gold and looks like artificial. Chippy tea water in my head tastes like the water that the battered sausages are in.
No, I don't want that. That tastes greasy.
Well, you can have the Rena water for dinner and I'll have the chippy tea water.
I love as well that this really reminds me of the real world obsession with, you remember that water that was called black water, and it was just literally just water with black food coloring,
right?
And people were paying like a fiver for it.
Yeah, it looked like gunk.
We must also shout out the remix featuring Brie Runway, which is so good on the deluxe. I feel like she really adds something to it, like a little bit of
excess,
a little bit more. One final thing I will also say, there was at the time this was out a really cool remix with a Nicki verse on it that was from, I think, a Chris Brown song, Ooh Boo, but they extracted Nicki's verse and put it on this, and it just sounds so good.
Oh, I want to hear that.
We'll put it on our Twitter.
Check the socials for that. 2 weeks before the album then is released, she puts out a fourth single. It is called Chosen Family, which Rena says she wrote thinking about her chosen family, which is her LGBTQ sisters and brothers and thems. She doesn't say that part. I mean, at university and at certain points in my life where I've been having a hard time, the LGBTQ community has always been there for me. The concept of chosen family has been long-standing in the queer community because a lot of people get kicked out of their homes and get ostracized from their family for coming out or just living true to themselves. I wanted to write a song literally for them, and it's just a message on this idea of a safe space, an actual physical space. I don't know what that last part actually means, but
I definitely think she references that when you see her on tour, she is like, this room is a safe space. She's like, when you're seeing me,
yeah,
my fans are your safe space. If you don't know each other, you know that you can hold hands in a Rena Sawayama concert or kiss at a Rena Sawayama concert and feel secure in the fact that she won't put up with anyone being in her crowd that says otherwise.
Right, and like a neck to put your head on to go to sleep, because when she plays a song, I go to sleep. I don't really like this song.
Well, I wouldn't listen to it, but I'm not a slow song, sad song kind of girl. Well, it's not sad, but you know what I mean? It's more,
yeah,
like,
there's emotional.
You know, every artist has their Hold My Hand.
This song does feel like a love letter to the LGBT community. This is that Larsa thing.
It's always a great time when you're at an LGBT. It's always super fun when you're in the community, like the LGBT.
This song feels like a proper love letter to the LGBTQ community. Like, it's a very positive song, but I find it a bit dull and repetitive.
I do too. I think also it definitely fits in with the theme of the album, where in Dynasty and in her second studio album, Hold the Girl, she's talking a lot about how she has a very fractured relationship with her family, not only her immediate family, but her lineage and the pressure they put on her and how it really took her over for a period of her life. So then when you marry that to the concept of her choosing her own family and being stable and happy, whether or not this is an explicit reference to her being queer or not, I think she is saying that when she was in a time of need, she found the queer community and they have held her.
Yeah, I definitely agree. Like, the album theming being about family and like a surname specifically, to say like we don't need to be related to relate, really marries in there, as you say. I like that, like, connection, and therefore I feel like it is a good single in that way. And it also is sonically different. It's more of a piano ballad. It definitely gives you more variety. Like we say, she's very capable of doing. Her vocals are really strong on this song as well.
Well, if you didn't like it, someone did.
That's right, because in June of 2020, English iconic, that's what Wikipedia says, musician Elton John called the album the strongest album of the year so far, and that every single track is great. Like, he was on Grammatica. It's definitely clear that Elton really likes this song. On the 1st of December 2020, he brings her on to play an acoustic version of it with her bandmate Vic Jamieson on his World AIDS Day TikTok live stream.
Say that again.
World can't. The very same month then, Rena and Elton started working on a reworked version of the song after 2 weeks of quarantine and lots of testing. He was like, this ain't Lana Del Rey. I care about COVID. And then they released it in April of 2021 as a single together with a new verse that Elton sings. And they also do a music video where they're like around the piano and all the words come up on the screen. Again, very lyric music video to me.
It's very cool as well. Elton did this sort of like pandemic album with different artists that he respected or liked their work. And I think that is a really nice passing of the torch of everyone has the time to create in the pandemic. So then he was like, let me give some exposure to some artists who I really respect and I think people will respect in the post-pandemic world, which clearly worked out.
Oh, for sure. I think this did, again, catapult her career a bit more forward, made her more mainstream in a lot of ways. And even if I don't love this song, I love that it did that for her.
The final single from the album is Bad Friend, which I always think of Paul because Paul has a Bad Friend t-shirt.
Hey.
And that's the best thing about this song.
I love this song. And so does Rena.
Rena herself has described the track as her favorite from the album and stated that it was written after she found out through social media that her formerly close friend had just had a baby.
Yeah, I just love the honesty in this song where she's going, oh, I haven't been doing a good enough job keeping up with my friends, which we all are guilty of. We're all so busy, especially when Rena's touring and stuff like that. So to see that one of her really close friends not only was pregnant, but actually had a baby and she had no idea. I just feel like it's really honest to be like, look, I'm a bad friend. Like, I'm so good at crashing in and like having a good time. But maybe when it's more mellow, she's not letting herself sit in those moments. And I think that's a good bridge between this and her second album, which is really introspective. This is the first real chance I get to see of her in these singles, at least looking inward, taking accountability and like reflecting.
I think it's really cool as well for an artist to make a song that is negative about yourself. I think a lot of songs are about how I'm that bitch, like I'm a server, like everyone else is a flop. But then she's like, yeah, I'm a bad person, which I think makes you more relatable to other people. I always say like the best way to like make a friend is to hate the same person, like in work or whatever. Like if you both don't like the same person, then you have that kind of like annoyance. So like she's being like I'm a flop too, like if you're a flop then you can relate to me. But she's not actually a flop. But
yeah, and it takes away some of that bravado and the fakeness of Access Comme des Garçons. This is more real and I really like that. And so did Elton, because he came back,
he said one more thing.
He's very vocal.
Yes, so much so that Elton said that Bad Friend would be a song that Madonna would die for.
You are delusional.
No, he needs to calm down. That's strong.
I think
Madonna. Bitch, I'm Madonna.
I think Madonna would die from a strong gust of wind at this point, but...
Oh, maybe she got a premonition of Rena releasing this song and then that's why she flew down the stairs with the Brits.
She's probably going to try and add herself to the song 3 years later like she did with Saucy Santana.
And she should.
Not.
Yeah, I think that's a bit strong. It's not that good, but it is. It's a strong song. The music video is different. Again,
the music video isn't as clear in its message for me. It's black and white. It has Rina in boy drag. And it's sort of like her having a drink, getting drunk, and then like making a friendship almost, and then having a fight with that person. And we both watched them, both had different interpretations of the video. I felt like it was more like, as you said, when she says, I'm good at crashing in, like she's good at like kikiing on a night out. And then when you actually have a fight, then where are you? Like then the other person vanishes when she's like punching them into the ground. Yeah. Whereas you felt the message was more about the ring that they show at the start.
Yeah, it sort of feels like at the very start, Rina's broken up an engagement or a marriage with somebody. Like she's got a, like she's holding a wedding ring. And I kind of felt like it was the breaking up of a long-term relationship. And then looking back after and realizing that you're like in the wrong. And then sort of lashing out as a result of that.
I think the best kind of media can be interpreted in different ways. So she ticked another box there. She's just so multifaceted.
And while that is a wrap for all the singles released from the album, we do have some more songs that we want to talk about in our section that we call Slept On or Chopped Off. Do you think Slept On or Chopped Off could be interpreted in multiple different ways?
Your Slept On or Chopped Off could mean anything.
Okay, Pete, we need to really go through. There are a lot of good songs in this album. Which one is Slept On?
Well, I'm a sucker for an opening track, even in a musical. Like my favorite number is always like the opening number. And I just think that Dynasty is so gargantuan. Like it's just the almost like orchestral like beginning.
Yeah, we're coming into the world of Sawayama. It's all around family. It's all around feuding. It's all around emotion. Like it feels like a change in style from Rina. The EP does have that more rock influence. I will say I was consistently searching for a song once this song finished that was as good in the rest of the album, and there aren't any. And that's not a bad thing. I think like the album's really strong, but this song's 10 out of 10.
Yeah, I just think the scope of this is so amazing. We're talking about sort of our interpretations of the word dynasty, and it can be interpreted so many ways that are relevant to the album. It can be, like you say, about family ties, like feuding, like almost like battle. And it can also be interpreted like luxury and opulence as well, which is another big theme of the album. I think it's amazing that she pulled so many different strings to kind of make up this album into different interpretations of one word. And I just think that it's so clearly the front runner in this album.
I'm sorry. And it was just really beautiful. Okay. So it was just, oh, so amazing.
Yeah. And I feel like it's really emotional. Like there's a lot of heart in there too. There are lyrics like in the chorus where she says, Dynasty, the pain in my vein is hereditary. Like all of her sadness kind of comes from pressure of being in this family, being in this dynasty. Her last name is sort of like a crutch in a lot of ways, and there's a lot of pressure. The lyric where she says, Mother and Father, you gave me life. I nearly gave it away for the sake of my sanity. I just think that's so raw. Like to talk about really heavy subject matter like this in your very first song on this album sets you up to know it's personal, it's introspective, and it sets up the gravity of all of it as well. It's so intense.
Rina actually says about Dynasty, I've been so severely depressed. When I was 13 or 14, I was self-harming. I've had eating disorders. Saving yourself also refers back to self-care and mental health in general, which is a big part of the album. In Dynasty, I'm talking about how my fucking family has been so selfish at times. With my dad's side, it's just a mess. The word dynasty is about the inheritance of money, wealth, and a name. And I've always grown up being very mystified about my dad's side because I know they're very wealthy, but all that's come of it is pain. Why doesn't anyone talk about the dynasty of pain? Yes, because it's such a big taboo to talk about anything negative about your family, I think, in any culture.
Yeah, especially the Japanese culture though. Like, and it's a lot of like, oh, don't ask questions, just do what you're told. But like, this is her breaking all of that from the very start. She's probing, asking questions, and she's no longer gonna be silenced. Like she reverts to in Shut the Fuck Up. Now she's telling people, be quiet. I feel like she's reclaiming a lot of that. And yeah, it's so powerful.
I will say, however, that when we get into the chop discussion, this was a very difficult one for us because I feel like the album is so concise already.
Yeah, and I think it all marries to the same theming that everything adds a little layer to what it means to be a human. Like, I feel like they all have the same central message, but in different ways. And it's hard to then take one of those puzzle pieces out without it falling like Jenga. But we're pulling on Love Me For Me because I don't really like that song.
I think the market for self-love songs is oversaturated now. I think that's what diminishes this for me.
Yeah, Love Me For Me.
Yeah.
It's cute. Like, it gives Christina, like, early 2000s for me. It's a cute song, but it's not really as heavy. And that's okay. Like, it's good to have levity at times. I would keep it. I think it does really fall into that whole, like, family piece again. If you can't love yourself, how you gonna love somebody else vibe, which she directly says in this song.
When's Rue gonna collab on it?
Rue doesn't know who Rina is. Rue doesn't know anybody born after 2000. Yeah, this album is really strong. I think that's the main message we both want to get across. I think this is a really strong debut album, and to have to cut anything being such a hard task is rare.
And we also don't like to cut something from a deluxe that already feels superfluous, because Bees and Honey would be on the chopping block. But
yeah, she already cut it in the first instance. So like, yeah. It's weird for us now to say it's the worst song. Like, let's just say it. It's the worst song.
Oh, for sure. And then I also just want to commend her for not doing what everyone does now, which is having like an 18 album track with three interludes. Like, she just does the thing. So it's hard to chop, but there has been a choppage and it's been chopped off.
Her chop bob in the SFU music video is amazing.
Her choppy fangmin bob.
Bitch.
Now sit back, drink your Rina water, and listen to these targeted ads. Hashtag capitalism.
Visit a world where conquering dynasties is part of the slave job, where mothers rise and flops fall, where nothing is excess and everything is your more. Pixel Panic, the new adventure game available on all consoles. Download now or die.
Hello to you all, and welcome back to the prestigious Snappy Awards. Now over to our hosts, Pete and Paul, for the first award, for the cringiest line.
We're right back to Love Me For Me. As I was kind of alluding to, I don't really like the intro of this song. She says, "Baby, I've been telling you, if you can't love yourself, how are you gonna love somebody else?" I just feel like that's like, oh, she did the RuPaul thing. She said the thing.
If you can't love yourself, how are you gonna love somebody else?
Well, you better preach now.
And she can't even get on Drag Race 2K.
I know. When is she going to be on that panel? It was actually hard to pick a cringiest line. The lyrics in this album are really strong, but we're chopping Love Me For Me. We're chopping this line.
And now for the second award of the night, the weirdest fact.
We have a doppelganger in our midst. Known enemy of myself, Olivia Mae Rodriguez released a music video for her song Brutal. Olivia can be seen maniacally doing product placement for a fake drink called the Golden Years.
Golden Years.
Fans and people with eyes immediately noticed that it was reminiscent of scenes in Rina's XS music video, in which she also does advertising for a fake gold drink.
Yeah, this XS is looking a bit familiar.
Definitely. People also pointed out that Olivia's newsreader scene is almost exactly the same as Rina's down to the outfits, and the side-by-sides don't lie.
Agree. A strong agree.
I won't talk on her, but all I can say is, from not listening to the album, all I've known of her is that she got her driver's license and that she copies people.
You're acting a bit sore there, Peter. I actually have a weirdest fact as well that I only recently heard, but now I can't unhear. In the song Snake Skin, she puts like a little beat in that's from Final Fantasy IX, like the celebration song. I think that's so obscure. Yeah, like the inner nerd in me really, really enjoys that. We'll put the clip in. And unlike Olivia, she's not copying. She's referencing.
She's pasting.
The awards just keep on coming. Now onto Best Live Performance.
This is difficult because there's not really any live performances given the fact that it was in a pandemic. People were dying, Kim. But once the pandemic was paused, she went on tour for the Dynasty Tour Live. It's amazing. But she recorded her performance in London at the Roundhouse on the 17th of November 2021 and released it. And it's an amazing tour sort of finish. But I want to commend her performance of Who's Gonna Save Me Now, because that song for me feels like it's supposed to be played live. Like they have the like Rina, Rina at the start.
Yeah.
There's a lot of like references that this song is at a concert or like a big rock performance. And I think it does really good justice. She looks good. Her two dancers are amazing. I just think this tour was really successful. And this song specifically is better live than on the record for me.
What is she wearing? It's time for the ugliest merch award.
Again, another difficult decision for me because unlike the main pop girls, she doesn't really miss. I don't think her merch is bad at all.
No, we have some.
I have a black t-shirt with the album cover on it and Paul has a Bad Friend t-shirt. So we are little pixels, but for me, it has to be this Chosen Family, almost like piss yellow t-shirt, which I think is kind of cute with her heads floating around the world, which is on fire. But I think it's just a bit busy. I also don't think it's very clear that it is Rena merch. And I don't really know why it's so yellow.
I don't get why the world is on fire genuinely in a song about Chosen Family. I think it is a bit strange. And also it says Chosen Family in two different fonts and Rena in like five. They're also in size 4 font. I need to like squint to read these.
Yeah, I don't think it's very successful. You're going to have to go over to the Instagram to critique it at SnapPod.
Now for a new award for the Snappies. Alternative album title.
This one was so easy for me to pick a different album title. I would pick Dynasty. I feel like it is like the honorary title track anyway, because there's obviously no song called Sawayama. I feel like it links in really well. It's a bit of a cop-out answer, but yeah, I think of it being amazing as just called Dynasty. The only thing about it being self-titled, it makes it hard to Google. Like when I type in Rena Sawayama, I just get Rena Sawayama. Yeah. So like for SEO, it's not the best, but maybe Dynasty would have been better that way.
There's high fashion on the runway. What have we got for our final award? Best Luke?
Biased because I have the merch of it, but this image of Rena from the album cover with her almost like draping hair onto wires. She's like bent over, she's doing a squat actually, and she's got her hands clasped together. She's in little heels. She's got in like a ripped, almost distressed bodysuit. She's got the beautiful makeup from the album cover. She's got almost like a henna design on her arm.
She trying to interrupt our henna session?
The shapes that she's providing and just the almost pinching effect of the makeup that she has on is just so breathtaking to me. I love it.
Well, that concludes another iconic Snappies. Join us next week for more awards. Now back to the studio.
So now that we're back in the studio, let's talk about what happens after she releases this album, because she's not done.
No, she said I have more to say.
And I have some more songs to put out on the deluxe version of the album. Go buy it. It's out on the 4th of December 2020. It's got songs like Lucid, We're Out Here, Bees and Honey, and Love It If We Made It. And one of those is really good.
Lucid is amazing. It is just like, you know, it's going to be played. It's her Super Bowl song.
I agree. I definitely agree. Like, yeah, I think one of the biggest questions I have. So like, if you haven't heard it yet, well, first of all, go and listen to it. But it's definitely more just a generic pop song. Like Blood Pop, who produces most of Chromatica, does it. It's like a everybody run to the dance floor, grab your cocktail and let's dance song. But do you think compared to the album, it was a clear attempt to be more mainstream?
I don't think it belongs in the album, to be fair. I think, I don't know if this was a tit for tat for being on Chromatica, Dawn of Chromatica, for Blood Pop then to be like, oh, I'll do a song with you as well. Or like, he liked her work and wanted to work with her too. It does seem like it's just a bop for being a bop, and you don't need a deep message to release every song and have a big reason for each song. She has such a conceptual album. I think it can be fun to just have like a good old-fashioned gay bop.
Especially because it's not tied to the album necessarily. You know, it's not on Sawayama really. I feel like it stands alone, and therefore you're right, it doesn't have the pressure of the family name, which actually is the theming of the album.
Yeah.
Like, it's nice that it's not on Sawayama, it can be something else. It's probably low-key my favorite Rena song, which is so basic. Like, I know.
It just makes you so happy though.
It's amazing, it's bright, it's colorful. The music video, like, talk about green screen production. I don't even know how she did this.
She went into the metaverse. Sawayama into the metaverse.
I'd watch that film, that trilogy probably. But yeah, she's basically pining after a love interest, and in her dreams she goes to visit them is really the concept of the song. Like, if she could choose to be with them, she will. Then in the music video, like, it's her sort of more fun, free-spirited self that guides her through. And I also actually, now thinking about it, feel like she's not going to visit a love interest in the music video, but she's going to find the version of herself that's not chained up by this family name.
Yeah.
And when like the Rena from the dream pulls her into the dream by her hand, it's like breaking the chain of that pressure and being more free. Oh my god, I love this song. I've just convinced myself it's even better.
I think it's also pandemic coded because she's very much in her house, and then in her dreams she can like fly around the world and da, da, da.
Yes. Oh, I totally see that as well. Yeah, this song is an absolute hit for me. We're Out Here flop. Oh. I don't like it. I'm sorry. I don't really think about the song. And then Bees and Honey is like, I heard the title and I was like, oh my god, sounds so good. It's 1 minute 40 seconds. Why are you putting an interlude on a new album with 3 tracks on it, girl? Skip.
Oh, in my fantasy it is her referencing Billy Piper, Honey to the Bee, because she did say in an interview she really likes Billy Piper.
Whoa, okay, well, it's still trash, but like, I love that.
The Dynasty tour for this album began in Dublin, Ireland. Have you heard of it? Have you heard of it?
I've been there.
Well, we were actually there on the 8th of November 2021 at the opening of the Dynasty Tour.
Mm-hmm.
Exclusive.
I don't want to reveal anybody's secrets in the podcast, but we did meet the Honest Vocal Coach that night.
Is this real? Is this actually happening? Are they really doing it?
Please. It was our first post-COVID event at all.
Yeah.
And it was so exciting. We were like, oh my God, we went down to Dublin early and we actually bought like different outfits when we were there because we wanted to like add a different bit or outfit. And we got in like, unlike us, very unlike us, we were not there for the opening act, which probably gives Paul shivers to this day.
Yeah, and they were forgiving you for that.
Well, it did let us meet a celebrity because we were like probably like three quarters into the room.
Yeah.
And like a woman entered the chat. You know that meme where it's like, there's a 56-year-old woman here. Like that was this small Honest Vocal Coach doppelganger who like attached herself to Paul.
It happens everywhere I go. I don't have a face for it, but she's a pharmaceutical assistant. I'm doxing her. And honest to goodness, she loved Rena to bits. She was crying multiple times, really loved it. But then she just wanted to see Chosen Family. I was like, girl, I'll boost you up over in front of me. I don't want to see it. And then she cried and then left.
When the world needed her most, she vanished.
Lucid had implied.
She said, I'm not here for the gay stuff. Well, no, Chosen Family.
She was only here for the gay stuff. And the tour was originally planned to take place in 2020, but was postponed several times due to the COVID pandemic, as we've said. Across the world, there was only 25 shows in very intimate venues. They were small, like the place she played in Dublin was small, but she did play most of the album, as well as the Free Woman remix from the Donna Chromatica remix album and Lucid. And yeah, we were there. What do you think, Pete?
I thought it was amazing. I don't know if we had blinkers on because we had, one, never been to a concert together.
Never.
And two, hadn't been to a concert in at least over nearly 2 years at that point.
Mm-hmm.
So I think we were just absolutely elated and she did not disappoint. Like, I'll always remember that that was, you know, the one that was, that felt like COVID, the pandemic was like releasing its grip and you could actually go and do things and be in a room full of people.
But we weren't the only people who loved it. The Guardian's Fergal Kinney gave the show 5 stars out of 5, writing that the tour walks the line between exuberant victory lap and striking political statement. I felt like we were watching a star. Like, I felt like it was Gaga levels of production, energy, budget, lighting, storytelling.
Costume, like.
Yeah, she looked incredible. The whole thing was amazing. And I'm like, oh, there's like variety of people here. Like, we felt like we were watching the birth of a star.
Yeah.
And I feel like this is what this era is. After this, she has collabs, as we've mentioned a few times, with Gaga on Free Woman. Elevates that track for me, to be honest.
Yeah, it's Nora without.
And also Beg Free with Charlie. I mean, bop.
I mean, I go to bed underneath a poster of Rena and Charlie on the Big For You cover every night.
As you should, as we all should.
While that sort of encapsulates the era as a whole, her next era wouldn't stray too far from the messages that come from this album, but sort of delve a bit deeper with a lot of more concise production. I feel like she is flexing here that she is able to dip her toe in any genre and eat it all up. Whereas I think she wanted to go more personal, comma raw.
Yeah.
And Hold the Girl is an amazing album and really does soundtrack the end of last year for me.
Yeah, I really love Hold the Girl. Like, I'm sure we'll cover it one day on the podcast. Like, it snaps. It definitely snaps, but does have less of an identity. But I, listening back, hear her wanting to start talk about more personal things, her family and stuff on this album. And I love that she was able to then process it and do it all. And I mean, we saw her again for this tour. Only a bigger budget, only better vocals, only better costumes. And I'm so excited to see what happens next with Rena for RS3. I mean, she's going to deliver another incredible album. Mother.
It's this girl right here. It's Winner. Right here.
Yeah.
It's my mother.
And with that, I think it's time we wheel out the indisputable impact iconometer. This is our brand new system for telling the gravity and scale of the impact of an album on pop culture. I'll start inputting it now and the machine will reply out with a percentage of overall impact.
Inputting bleep 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 dipped in the mother lake bleep, let's go LGBTS. Beep, I want more beep XSSSS. Calculation and final result. 35%.
Now, I know initially this seems low, but this is only the impact on culture and pop culture and gay culture, not our personal ranking of what we think the album deserves.
I want to reiterate that point. Every album that we do on this podcast, we think snaps. For me, that's above an 80%, like in my enjoyment. I enjoy at least 80% of this album / era if I put it on the podcast.
We are not talking about flops here. No, it's not called flopped. This ain't flopped.
However, when we really broke it down, it was just difficult to give a higher score. We're going to start with the positives like we always do. Like, it got her name out in a biggish way. I feel like it definitely propelled her, as I said, into having some bigger collabs with Gaga, Charlie, Elton. And there was that endorsement from Elton as well, which was really strong. It also was the first big post-COVID tour. It really was the beginning of pop music coming back into like public forums, and like it sold out. It did really well. The reviews were really strong, and overall, like, the reviews of this album were extremely strong as well. Like, to get that high, 90 out of 100 Metacritic is no easy feat.
In terms of negatives, I do think that COVID also had a negative effect on the album rollout and sort of the promotion and live performances, because we obviously don't get many at all. I think it was very much in the era of at home sessions and not really what you would want to be doing as a debut album rollout. But I think the songs on the album are so amazing, as we know, but I don't think they are as well known or have pierced into the zeitgeist of pop culture as much as you think when you live in the microcosm of gay Twitter.
I think that's the biggest reason that there were so many points deducted for me. I think if you were doing that really annoying gay guy called Billy who runs into people and goes, name a Rihanna song, I'm a song for a dollar, I feel like
they'd be like, who?
Yeah, nobody would be getting any money. But regardless of the total impact on pop culture, I think Rihanna always just leaves us wanting more.
Thank you so much for tuning into this episode of Snap Season 2. As always, follow us along on our socials at SnapPod over on Instagram, where we post behind-the-scenes content and visuals of everything we talk about on the episode. And don't forget to subscribe to Snapped on your favourite podcast streaming service to get notified when episodes release over the next coming weeks. You can even give us a glowing 5-star review if you're feeling particularly generous.
Do it. I've been your host, Paul.
And I've been Pete.
And as always, keep those ears peeled for a quick sneak peek of next week's album at the end of this episode, and we will see you then.
Bye.